This is Mark, and you're listening to The Husband Did It. Or did he? I am on with my co-host, Lindsay. How are you?
I'm doing well, Mark. Excited to discuss this case.
This is a, you know, when you first look at this case, you kind of think, oh, some asshole guy killing his family. But I think it gets really deeper into things. I think you went down a few rabbit holes.
Of course I did. That's what I do.
Your whole backyard rabbit holes. So many rabbit holes you put in a pool. So we're talking about David Hendricks, and the chaos and, I guess shocking outcome of what happened to his family, on the night of between November 7th and 8th, 1983. You know, this is a shocking case to me. On the exterior, it's not, I think. I think when you just hear about it, you're like, nah, I heard, you know, no big deal.
That guy killed his family, whatever, yeah.
I mean, it's awful, but it's not a story I haven't heard before. But this, when you really dive into this guy a little bit more, you know what, we'll get to it, but I do have my opinion at the end as to what I think happened, and I'm sure you do as well.
I do.
So I think we'll get to it. So let's see. Like I said, November 7th, the night of November 7th into the 8th in Bloomington, Illinois, which I think is a pretty nice suburb, actually.
I believe it is as well.
Susan Hendricks, who's at the time 30 years old. She has three children, Rebecca, Grace, and Benjamin, aged 9, 7, and 5, in the order that I just stated. So little kids, you know, that's a noisy house.
Yeah.
Well, the unfortunate fact here is that they were brutally murdered. All four of them brutally murdered on that evening. And you might be asking, so where was the husband? We have the address, and the address is very well known.
Sure.
I've actually looked it up, and I think it's like a nice suburban house. You know, it's kind of a common house for around here, but you know, that's why I'm thinking like Bloomington, Illinois. I wonder like what is the demographic? I don't know Illinois very well. But,
I think it depends on the area of Illinois. I think it fluctuates pretty highly from like great neighborhoods to not so great neighborhoods pretty quickly.
Yeah, like kind of like New York.
Right? Yeah, that's true.
You know, there's an area, and I always show it to people. It's such a shocking area. So if you go down Central Avenue, right, which hopefully it's not Friday afternoon when you're doing this. So go down Central Avenue heading towards Queens, and you make this one turn. I want to say it's Lawrence Avenue. I can't say for sure, but there's a literal, it's everything is manicured and beautiful. Everybody has a tennis court, like in their backyard. And then you go over the tracks and it's like, this is like Queen, like legit, lower income Queens.
Yes.
It's a literal over the tracks moment that exists like right in front of you. It's like a Norman Rockwell painting, but it's a shocking little spot. But anyway, I'm getting off. And
no, but we're talking about this house, and I agree with you. It's I think it was a very nice house in the 80s.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of what I'm looking at it as. I mean, you could have updated it, you know.
I don't think it's aged as well.
You know what? I'm not really sure if... Oh, all right. I was thinking of a different house. This is a split. It's a regular split. Is it a split? Yeah. And yeah, this is like your normal Long Island house, actually. Not to...
Right, but I don't know what it is for Bloomington, Ohio. Oh, I'm sorry. Bloomington, Illinois, Ohio.
Well, you know how you find out. You go on like realtor.com, you scroll right down to what are the taxes? That'll tell you exactly what kind of neighborhood we're talking about. And yeah, the taxes are painfully low. It's, in 2023, the property taxes were $6,000. I mean,
wow.
So the schools probably are not very good. I'm sure they're fine, But yeah, that's, yeah. When I kind of hate looking at houses in other parts of the country, because that's my thing. I go right to the taxes.
I know. And we get killed here for our taxes. It's like
you give away a Corvette every year. Taxes. It's insane. Yeah. I mean, where you live, it's the tax bracket is a bit higher. So, yeah, good for you.
Way to brag. Way to brag.
Thanks, I guess. Because the higher your taxes is keeping my taxes at a just painfully high level. Yours is just,
you know, you're welcome. Obscene.
Thank you. It is nice. And Scott, thank you. So let's see. They were brutally murdered. And
with an axe and a butcher knife.
Yeah, they were hacked to death with an axe and a butcher knife, like you said. But the axe and a butcher knife were from the house. So whoever did this didn't bring it with them. They, I have an axe, you know, but
of course you do.
But of course, don't we all? Isn't that our giveaway for the husband did it? Like we're gonna have like engraved axes that people can hang up. And I, that'd be kind of fun, right?
Or giveaway. Use as fit. Sure.
Sure. Sure. Somebody kills somebody with it. We go, we're somehow pulled into the
free publicity.
There's no such thing as bad publicity. So we're laughing. It's a terrible story, but you know, Lindsay has a very dark sense of humor.
I do. And I love it.
But yeah, so I mean, so I have an axe. I went to like Harbor Freight and bought like a $10 axe because I had to chop down this little tree, right? And now it sits in my garage. But I wouldn't know where that was. So, and a person breaking into my house wouldn't know I have an axe sitting in my garage somewhere. So this person knew where their axe was. I'm going to guess that axe is not a common tool in anyone's house, really, unless you live in the wilderness. They don't. They're in Bloomington. So that being said, that's like your first, I think, red flag of like, well, they didn't even bring their own tools to do this.
That's a very good point. And there's so many, many red flags in this story.
The weapons were also cleaned and left there, right?
Yep.
There was a staged burglary where people went around, they pulled the drawers out, and they say little was taken. I don't know what that means. Do you know what was taken?
I don't, actually.
Because, like, little taken could mean, like, you know, a $40,000 engagement ring, you know?
Right.
What's little? So I'm not really, you know, sure. And let's see. You know what really got to me? I don't know where you found it, but you found the 911 call. Or calls.
Yes.
I'm like, I don't know. That just seemed very strange to me. I want to have somebody reenact that for us.
So when I heard it, I heard it and I read it, and it doesn't get any less weird.
So is there audio to that?
There was not the link that I sent you, but I don't think they have, they still have, I would be shocked if they still have the actual audio, but I mean, you can get anything to play on audio, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the laws and the rules are for keeping like 911 calls, but I, you know, being that this happened so quickly, I would imagine that they would have put that into evidence, right?
Right. I'm sure it was in evidence in the trial. I'm sure.
So, all right. So the father, people are like, well, where was the father? And that's David. And the father had just, do you want to go over, I guess, like what led up to this night? Like, how do you think we should approach this?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's about what led up to that night and also sort of who these people are.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it's really interesting. So, David Hendricks and his wife, Susan had met when Susan was 16 and he was 15. They were both part of a conservative, a strict fundamentalist Christian sect called the Exclusive Plymouth Brethren.
You know, I got a lecture from somebody once, and I threw it right back in their face, and I'm glad I did. And they were saying, like, well, you know, in Christianity, there's not as many, you know, different sects and different what would you call this? Like branches of Christianity versus Judaism. And I'm like, that is totally not true.
Yeah.
You have Baptist, segregationist, like you have
Protestant, things that are not,
Protestant, Lutheran, Catholicism, of course. And
you know, right. The
big, and I mean, there's tons, and there's ones I've never heard of until like this case. And he was a part of one that is, from what I could tell, a little bit, I want to say culty, because I don't really know the details of whether it's culty, but people do seem to lean into it as one of the weirder ones. I just can't find right. why. I don't know exactly why. Outside
well,
of,
there's,
they don't there's, believe in divorce.
They don't believe in divorce. There's no concept of clergy.
That I missed.
Which I thought was interesting. And it's really just, there. It's just a bunch of sort of there's no ordained or unordained person who functions as a minister or a pastor or, as we would say, a rabbi, nothing. And they're just led by the church elders.
Which is usually like the, you know, like priest or pastor or rabbi.
Except that they don't operate that way. Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of strange. I mean, that's opening up your door to really being a cult. That really does. It just... Well, why this person? You know, they don't seem very knowledgeable. Well, they're an elder.
Right. And also, I mean, you've got these 15 and 16 year olds, you know, meeting their future partner. Yeah. I don't know. That sort of says cult to me, too.
I really think it's like a thing in some parts of Christianity. And, you know, I have to say also in some parts of Judaism, I see people trying to, you know, get this all together. And somebody who goes to our kids' high school made a joke and then doubled down that they're not joking. They're Indian, that they're being set up on an arranged marriage.
That's true. I'm sure. And in our town, you probably
robotics. Need to
be. I figured it was in robotics. Yeah,
it's always in robotics. It's to a robot. No, it's not to a robot. And yeah, I mean, I guess if it works, I mean, this is the way some people have been setting up marriages for millennia. So
I agree.
I don't judge.
I'm not judging. I could set up a marriage. I wouldn't mind setting up marriages for my children, but I fear the man who I fix up with my daughter. So
I wouldn't fear the man. I would
fear for him. Yeah. Fear for him. Yeah.
Him showing up crying.
Yeah.
She's so mean. I don't think your daughter's mean, by the way. I mean, maybe she's
just a woman who knows what she wants.
It's just I can imagine her being mean. She's got a hell of a voice, though.
She does have a hell of a voice. Thank you. I also think it was a little culty. There was no television, limited toys for the children.
Oh yeah, no holidays, right? Like no Christmas.
No Christmas.
Huh.
No, and the household emphasized Bible study and isolation from world influences.
No, I mean, yeah, I mean, it sounds a little like Jehovah's Witness, or even
yeah, that's true.
I don't know much about Seventh Day Adventists, but I don't know if they kind of lean towards this as well. As I list even more Christian like branches.
Right, but you've also sort of, I feel like you've tapped into the kind of culty Christian branches, so.
A little bit. Hey, it's all the same tree, right?
This is true.
Hey, if you want to bring up the Kabbalah.
Oh, yeah, that's culty too.
Definitely. Yeah, that's totally. I mean, red bracelet all day. All day.
Right?
I love that red bracelet. I don't understand it, but I like it.
I don't understand it, but if it's going to protect me from bad things, I'm cool with it.
Mysticism, too. I could burn incense. Right. I'm in.
Right.
And matzah.
And matzah, yeah.
So yeah, they had this upbringing. Let's just say, like, I guess, strict Christian fundamental belief systems. I don't know.
I think that's an apt description.
Some communities just have a little bit more going on with all of that. I think it's nice if you can marry your high school sweetheart type of thing. I don't know.
Oh, I'm so glad I didn't, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, I think back, I'm like, oh, you know, that'd be interesting.
Right.
I wonder how the divorce would have went.
Yeah. Not well for me. Not well.
Yeah. So, I mean, but, you know, like, but that's another thing. Like, when we're kids, we're stupid, you know, like you're just kind of having fun. And they went right to kids, and they have, you know, three kids. They seem to be doing well. He came up with an invention for hips.
No, I think it's for your back. It's an orthopedic back brace. Mm-hmm. And it's called the CASH, cruciform anterior spinal hyperextension, which when you see a picture of it, makes sense. Not the name. The name's just catchy and weird, but mm-hmm. But the picture of the brace, I think it was probably novel in that it was something that accommodated women as well.
Okay.
And I believe that's why he got in all the trouble with all the touchy-feely stuff.
And, you know, as a man, I just have to say that I think that only a man with a kind of questionable home life, and that's why I dig a little bit deeper into David, when I say maybe a sad home life, a personal sad, I'm not saying, I think that his wife seemed nice. I think his kids seemed nice. His life seemed pretty good, but he went through that like midlife crisis and he didn't know what was going on. So only a man can take a device meant to help your back and turn it and somehow sexualize it.
Right? This is true.
And it wasn't even like fetish weirdness. It was hiring models and then somehow kind of being like, hey, ladies, you know, and then and not having boundaries, I guess.
But you know why I think he needed to hire models, and I think they were women around that time, is because I think that was when the women were getting all into the aerobics phase, and a lot of them were probably injuring themselves by not knowing proper form and stuff.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it sort of fits with the timeline.
Did you happen to find any of those sexy photos? Do you find any photos? Because I have a hard time imagining. No, I don't mean it like literally like that. When, like, for instance, a neck brace or any type of instrument that you have to wear, any type of, I guess, device that you might have to wear, a brace of some sort. I don't know if I've ever seen a photo of a model wearing it. You know, I'm not saying it doesn't exist.
No, but I did find some pictures of them, and I wish I had thought to save it and send it to you.
That's okay.
But it's like it almost looks like you know when you get on a roller coaster and like the they're sort of on the chest, their upper chest, they've got a holster part there, and then it goes down the there's like a solid part that goes down the middle, and then again on the upper maybe like right above the belly button there's two more pads, and it wraps around the back of the brace.
That's what that is, because I'm usually sitting there with my eyes shut and I'm crying hysterical.
Oh, you must be fun for amusement parks.
It's worse. It's almost as bad as the dentist. No, I'm kidding. So it's like a thing that comes down and kind of engages, of course, because a brace has to engage into something.
Yeah, it does not look sexual at all, I have to tell you.
And only a guy in a very screwed up life could, you know, be like, you know, hey, this is a cute girl. Let's put this, you know, what people used to wear is like retainers in the 80s, you know, on their face. Yep. Like the, you know, it's kind of like that. That's what I picture, like the headgear.
It's a chest retainer. That's what it is.
Oh, my God. It sounds awful. And it sounds like if you have to wear one of those, it's not a good experience. I feel bad, you know, but hopefully you're getting some relief. I'm sure people are still using them on some level.
That's a great question. Or probably a later model of them. Yeah.
Yeah. We do learn that he did continue his career later, but getting ahead of ourselves, but The night before this all happened, they went to Chuck E. Cheese, which I thought was interesting. They just keep throwing Chuck E. Cheese around, like, like naming it by name. Like it has anything to do with the case, you know?
I know, but again, it was the 80s.
Yeah.
Chuck E. Cheese. Everyone went there.
Dude, I went, dude, there's a Chuck E. Cheese in Valley Stream. Do you know that?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, it was something else, wasn't it?
So yesterday we went to get Rami fitted for a tux, which is a fun experience, right?
I've got
to
do that still, yeah.
And we're like, do we buy it or do we rent it? And we're deciding, the guy priced it out to buy it. I'm like, why is it so much? It's just a suit. like he has a nice suit at home, you know, like there's no, this is crazy. But to rent it was only like a few hundred dollars. So,
and you're renting it from now till prom?
Not now. Like we went there, he got fitted. And, because somebody said like get in there early because like they'll run out of the different choices.
Okay.
Anyway, this episode is brought to you by Men's Warehouse.
Right.
Oh yeah. So we drove around. Cause I'm never over there. I kind of avoid Greenacres Mall. I feel it's dangerous. And we're like, wow, look, all these stores that opened up over here. And yeah, they have a brand new Chuck E. Cheese, over That's there.
Crazy.
And I'm like, Rami, you want to go in? And he's like, no.
Of course he doesn't want to go in.
I'm kidding. You know, it's these kids, they grow up. It's over.
And then we're sad.
Yeah. You know, we'll deal with it, I guess. Right.
Okay.
That's why we have a podcast.
That is true.
They went to Chuck E. Cheese. So they do normal family things, right? I mean, it's not like they're miserable. I mean, I hear when a family doesn't celebrate like major holidays, like Christmas and you're a Christian, that seems major to me. That seems hard. Then I'm like, you know, maybe they're not wealthy. Maybe they don't have anything, but these people seem to have some money. Like it didn't
they have sense. A lot of money.
Yeah.
They have a lot of money. And also, David is, he sounds like he's more of a weekend dad.
Yeah, that makes sense. He seems like he puts a lot of time and effort into what he does.
Right. That's what Chuck E. Cheese is made for, isn't it? Weekend dads.
Yeah. And for your kids to come home with a staph infection. It's disgusting. Yeah. The ball. There's a song called I Got Drunk at Chuck E. Cheese by Weird Paul. A very funny song. Maybe I'll throw
Never it heard.
This episode. It's a real independent rock band. It's very funny. So, yeah, they go there. They bring up that they had vegetarian pizza. And of course,
maybe they didn't eat meat.
Yeah, I don't know why they brought up that it's a vegetarian pizza. I know why they brought up the meal, because later on we're able to determine the amount of time that has passed from them eating, digesting, and then finally what happens after their murder.
So
they go home. David's like, guys, I'm gonna drop you off, but I'm going on the road.
This makes sense to me
to a point. There's a lot of holes in the story, in my opinion, such as his wife didn't know where he was going. Two, somebody with a little bit of money is not going to just stay at like some like crappy motel, because he didn't come off as somebody who is painfully frugal, you know?
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with like stopping and like, all right, I'm just going to stop at the motel and sleep there or whatever. You know, on a road trip and everything when I was younger, like I definitely stayed at a motel or two, but it'd be nicer to, you know, just upgrade, spend a little bit more, in my opinion.
He wasn't going to sleep at a motel or a hotel at all. He was going to drive through the night.
But when he calls on that 911 call, he says he's at the motel.
Right, because he had just gotten there.
But she didn't know where he was going. Like, does your wife know where you are? You know, no. So I thought that was a little bit odd because, you know, if you're going to go on a trip of some sort, wouldn't you tell Scott where you're going to be?
He would tell me, but I wouldn't listen.
but you know, there would be some level of communication. I mean, of course, nowadays cell phones, so who cares? But this is, you know, another thing where no cell phones.
Right. You know what? No, because when Scott and Hunter went to go look at two colleges that they went to look at, mm-hmm. I did not. I had no idea where they were staying.
But you were one cell phone call away.
Yes.
And so it's a weird thing to, you know, compare now and then, of course, 40 years.
Well, this is true. And but also they have three young kids. I mean, they're still young. I know they're not infants, but they've got three young kids. She's got them all. Mm-hmm. You know, she's in charge of them all. And I don't know.
I don't know. I think that that's a little bit, if you're a traveling salesperson, I think that maybe you communicate better. Not everyone is a great communicator. Not everyone is just such a perfect husband like me. But in my opinion, to be a perfect husband just means you don't kill your family in this instance.
It's a low barrier, but I support that.
Yeah, right? It's not bad. I don't want a medal for it. Like, hey, you didn't kill your family.
But people should know that about you, Mark.
But I did get weepy when I saw my son in a tuxedo. Seeing them grow up is awesome.
Yes.
I'll never go back on that. That being said, he's like, yeah, I'm going to drive through the night. Where was he headed? Yeah, like he was going like a 7 or 8 hour ride, right? Like this was a serious drive.
Yes. Well, he was up in Madison, Wisconsin when he called the cops.
Right. Yeah, he was going to Wisconsin.
Right.
And so, yeah, he drives through the night. He's trying to call Susan over and over again.
Yes.
And that's
his wife. Yes.
Yeah. So he's, he can't seem to like reach her. But. I forgot this detail. Yeah, so I mean, he calls the next morning, of course. Like, can you, he's just not able to reach her. I'm not really sure what he does at that moment. Like, does he go to sleep? Because he didn't sleep at all night.
Right, so he probably went to sleep. I could see that.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense, right?
Or maybe he went on a meeting with a model. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, you gotta do the, what do they call it? The couch or audition type of thing. I forget.
The audition. Yeah.
The casting couch. Yeah.
Casting couch. Thank you.
I wouldn't put it past this guy, but another aside is, David at this moment in time, anyway, has started to take care of himself a little bit better. He got his hair styled. He's starting to dress a little bit better. He dropped some weight.
His mustache. Yeah.
He's looking better, and I'm going to bet that, he's gotten some level of attention from someone, maybe.
I agree, and it probably, right, and it probably doesn't hurt that he's now a wealthier man.
Yeah. He goes to Wisconsin, November 8th, he goes and makes sales calls in Wisconsin, and he checks into the motel. But he's calling, like I said, calling repeatedly, calling home. He decides to contact local relatives and the neighbor. And around 10:30, after nothing, the police do a welfare check and discover the bodies. But the thing is that what leads up to that is that phone call, those, I think, three phone calls that you dug up, which I'd like to, read some of it. Because I think, like, the police seem disinterested.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I'm calling, like, the fourth precinct.
Yes. They're disinterested, they're distracted, and they're not impressed with this man.
Like, well, that's not our responsibility.
Right.
It's like, oh, come on, man. So let's see. He calls Bloomington police first. He says, yes, this is Dave Hendrickson. I mean, I'm Hendrix. And he's stating he's in Wisconsin. He's on a business trip. And he's a little, and this is what is kind of weird. I'm a little concerned about my wife and kids because I've been trying to call them all day and haven't gotten any answer. He gives his address, basically stating that what the circumstances are and how he's tried to call periodically through the day and just has not been able to get through to them. She was supposed to be at a dinner date that evening. So this is 5 hours after she didn't show up to her dinner date.
Yes.
And she just never showed up. So far the dispatcher's doing, I think, everything that you should do. What's your wife's name? And it's also weird because dispatcher's not like, when was the last time you saw your wife? When was the last time you spoke to your wife? Does she normally, you know, will she just up and go somewhere? You know, none of those questions are being asked. And I'm presuming that this transcript is not leaving out those questions.
No, it seems pretty complete.
Yeah. I think dispatchers have gotten better. You've heard 911 calls, right? Right? You've heard them.
Of course I have. What do you think I do with my spare time? Come on
now. I watch so much body cam footage, it's nauseating. So dispatcher's like, well, you know, I mean, after getting the information from Hendricks, she could have taken this one particular route. I had a neighbor go to the house, nobody's there, and I'm worried. This is all legitimate sounding. Like, this is all like, I'm worried. Like, I need some real wellness check.
Right.
And
I'm not sure why he's so worried.
Well, I don't know, a whole day not hearing from the wife and three kids. And this is, you know, that evening. It's been, what, like 18 hours since he's arrived.
Yeah.
And
it's been 18 hours since he arrived. That's a good point.
And I'm going to guess that his wife is not the type to not answer the phone. I'm going to guess that this guy spent the $100 and got an answering machine. So he probably left a million messages.
Yeah. I forgot about answering machines back then.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to love answering machines. So, and that's another thing. It doesn't come up, like, were there messages?
Right.
Did he really, you know, I'm going to guess he really did try to call all of these times.
So I think so, too.
But the dispatcher's like, well, that's out of our jurisdiction, basically. I'm going to have to give you another number. You're going to have to reach out to the county. You're going to have to reach out to the local. You have to do this. You have to do that. And it's like, can't you just help me a little bit? Like, aren't you the police? I'll always have a tough time understanding why I have to call different police for certain things.
Yes.
You know, it just seems too much for me. But they did actually transfer him to the number and, like, do you have the number? It's like, sure do. I can kind of picture there being an accent when they say, I sure do. And it's like, if they can't help, you should contact the state. I don't know. That's not how people from Illinois talk, but.
No, I don't think it is. There's a different accent.
But this guy's from the South. The dispatcher. Mm.
Right. I like that twist you added to it.
There is one thing in here that I think is a little red flaggy, if I may. Okay, yeah. I'm making these calls long distance. There wouldn't be any way you could check this out for me. And so, all right, I'm worried about my family. Am I really worried so much that it's going to be an extra $5?
No, unless he was really cheap. Or is he accidentally... He's saying he's making the calls long distance. Is he sort of accidentally reminding them that
I didn't think of that.
That he's not there and he couldn't have known anything about it?
I was thinking he thought he was going to call and they would be like, we'll send somebody right out, sir. And instead he's like getting a list of phone numbers of people to call. Like he's getting homework.
Right.
He's like, oh, I thought this would be easy. I'm exhausted. I just killed my whole family.
I don't know. I feel like he's definitely setting up. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's a weird thing to say, I think. I think, anyway. Again, coming from a point of view of somebody who has some money. Now, long distance, you made long distance calls when you were a kid, I'm sure. And it could be a few dollars, but I don't recall it ever being prohibitively expensive.
Well, it depends how long you sat on that chat line for.
Well, on chat line.
Yeah.
Call us at 976-CHICKS.
Right.
No, but I when I lived at home, I had a girlfriend in Suffolk County. And that was long distance. when to call her was long distance. And I remember it was like an extra, like, you know, because when you're a stupid kid, you're back in those days, you actually talk. And I don't know, it would be an extra like $35 or something.
Yeah, it was expensive.
But it wasn't like, oh my God, we're losing the house, you know?
No, and if I'm missing my family, I'm certainly not, like, upset about the long distance.
Well, how long does he think he's going to be on the phone for? Is he trying to cancel SiriusXM and he's going to be on the phone for 3 hours? He's, you know, I think it's a weird thing to stress. But I like what you said, where maybe it's a reminder that, hey, it's long distance. I'm nowhere near this house.
I got nothing to do with this. Yeah.
And he did throw his whole story out there. So we see he gets transferred to Sergeant Aiken. And it's going back and forth. They're taking the same kind of information. I like the fact that, what kind of car does she have? And we get a yellow 1972 Cadillac. What? This is a boat.
It's a giant yellow banana.
With a green top.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, was she on the way to her Mary Kay like meeting? It's like, was she selling Avon out of that thing? That is a crazy car to like. But also, if he's got more money, why is she driving a 10-year-old car? Now, I mean, of course, nowadays, if you have a car for 2 or 3 years, oh, what's wrong with you? You know?
Right.
But I think even back then in the 80s, to have a car from the 70s was kind of a thing. Like, you, it just, at least I didn't see it. Unless,
well, I sort of wonder, with all the kids they had, did they need a bigger car? And maybe the 72 Cadillac was bigger than the more recent models.
A 1972 Cadillac gets probably like 11 miles to the gallon. And in the early 80s and the late 70s, gas prices were, they were going way up to $1 a gallon. And, you know, I would imagine, and also fuel shortages. I don't know. It's a weird choice that she would drive that thing. I don't think it has anything to do with the case, but I think it might have a little bit to do with either she loved that car, or he was like really frugal and said, well, as long as the car starts, you're going to keep it, which is the way I drive my cars.
I think that's the way we drive our cars.
Yeah. Too. I mean, as long as I can connect my phone to the car and it's clean, I'm good to go.
Yeah, and connecting the phone is.
Of course, we all drive nice cars, so I mean, whatever. So it's not right. Not like we're driving. I would drive a 72 Cadillac. It's a beautiful car.
Of course you would. But that's why I knew I could ask you the car question.
Yeah. But in 1983, I wouldn't want to be in that car. I'll be honest, because you know, you'd be mortified. I think. I'm talking about, I grew up in the Five Towns. What am I talking about? You know what I mean?
This is true.
It's,
but I wonder if there's something there about, like, not, you know, no worldly possessions or something maybe related to
that's
the
cult. Interesting. Yeah. Like,
you know,
and vanity and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Sounds like a decent religion. You don't have to buy gifts. You don't have to upgrade your car. Your religion says you can't upgrade your car.
Yeah.
Think of all the money you'd save. Sorry, I can't take that new car.
No, can't do it.
I'll just fill up the air. So going back and forth, I think Hendrix is almost becoming frustrated on this call.
Yes.
Because Sergeant Aiken is saying, okay, mentioning she was supposed to go to a town called Delavan, and that's the way, you know, she would have gone this route. Now, that's 40 miles, by the way, in a 1972 Cadillac.
Right.
That's like 4 gallons of gas right there. 8 gallons of gas there and back. Just FYI. So Delavan is not in their district. So he's kind of, you know, the officer's just kind of saying you have to call like the state police and all this kind of stuff. So Hendrix is like, okay, tell you what, can I leave you with my number? So is that another thing where it's like, all right, well, look, this guy's, he even can be reached out of state. He's clearly not involved in this.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's really trying to, because does he really think that something is going on? I don't know. Why would he?
You mean the Hendrix, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why would he? Exactly. Now, I know that a lot of parents, or, you know, like Ramiel, he went into Manhattan today, right?
Okay. You
know, if I shoot him a text and I don't hear from him for like 2 or 3 hours and I see he, you know, maybe didn't even read it, I might track his phone. Now, this is you can't do this back in the olden days.
No, I definitely have all my kids on Life 360.
Yeah. Okay, good. And you should. I mean, and if I can't see his location, does that happen? I'll send him another text.
Okay.
And then, or I'll do the thing where you hold it and you put the exclamation point. Like, I'm sending this. I'm saying hello. And I'll get that feeling. But I'll tell you, 18 hours and I haven't heard from my kid and he went into Manhattan. I can't track where he is. I might be upset. You know, I think you would be.
Gone in yet though. Has he? No.
Has he not what?
He hasn't gone in yet to Manhattan today though. No.
He's there right now.
Oh, really? Yeah, wow.
He's going to a record store. This, you know.
Because he's just as cool as his dad. I like that.
I don't know about that. Although he does seem to start wanting to go through my records, which I'm like, no, I'm just kidding. He can have it all. But, you know, and it's just one of those things where I know I also have only one kid. You know, you have double that. So,
yeah.
So I'm probably a lot more helicopter parent than I appear to be.
Yeah.
But I try my best to keep my cool. But 18 hours, I think I would like be kind of upset, especially it's nighttime again.
Right.
So
this is a good point.
You know, I'm throwing my own weaknesses out there. So I'm putting myself in his situation, but I wouldn't be worrying about the phone call cost. I wouldn't be worrying about, can you just call me back type of thing. And also the sergeant says, does she know where you're staying? And says, no, she doesn't.
Right.
It's kind of, I don't know. I'm in room 110, the motel, you know, if a woman answers, it's just a friend of mine. It's a model.
Think nothing of it. Yeah. Think nothing of it.
I can just picture his motel. It's like a bottle of scotch, two pizzas, a lot of cigarettes. Because it was the '80s and people smoked. So, and it's also weird that the sergeant's like, all right, what should be driving a yellow Toyota? And he's like, no, a yellow Cadillac, the green top. I feel like I would want to hear these. Cause I feel like the way the tone would give away exactly how David's innocence or not, you know?
Yeah.
But we have to dig that up. We'll have to see if it's out
there. I know, which reminds me, do you think he was innocent?
Should I just get right to that?
We can hold off if you want. Because I'm just trying to read your signals.
You know what? I'll say it right now. I don't know.
Okay.
I am genuinely on the fence. And I was convinced he was guilty at first. And one particular thing happened and I'm like, I think there's like a 30% chance he's guilty.
Okay.
I just doing what they did is shocking, right?
Yeah.
I guess we should get into that. This is the part of the episode where we talk about terrible, really terrible things. And it's not fun things like 1972 yellow Cadillacs. So the victims were attacked in their bedrooms. We don't know exactly in what order, but I'm going to guess that the wife got it first.
That's an interesting guess. It's an interesting guess.
Because the wife could probably defend herself on some level. Scratch.
But how did they, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but they found the children in their beds, right? Uh-huh.
Yeah. I was like, did they drug them somehow? And it just,
they had to have,
didn't show up in a tox screen or something, or did they even do,
like, I don't know how much tox screening they did then.
were the kids on any level of medication, you know, like already?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say no.
Yeah, in the 80s, kids were just, you know what? And their faith probably wouldn't have been aligned with that.
That's what I'm thinking.
But poor Susan. So you see a photo of her. She just looks like a nice woman. Like there's, she's like, I see no inkling of why he would be so mad at this woman. I mean, we don't know the home life. But from a physical standpoint, she seemed okay, whatever that means. So Susan got multiple axe blows to the head and neck, which is crazy. Just doing that. Multiple, too.
Yeah.
Rebecca was hacked repeatedly. And Grace and Benjamin, they were just got a dozen blows each. Benjamin, on the other hand, had 16 head wounds.
A lot. That seems like overkill. And yeah. It's interesting that he's the only boy.
Yeah. And was Benjamin was the oldest?
No, Benjamin was the youngest.
What do you think that was? Like, do you think, putting aside whether it was the husband that did it or if it was the uncle, that's who I'm kind of pointing at. Like, that's some deep seated anger towards a particular person.
I would say that it's possible that Benjamin was a stand-in for David. But someone who was mad at David was taking it out on Benjamin as his son.
I mean, I just think when you have mental breaks, like, well, whoever did this had to have not been in the right frame of mind. And if they are, and if that is the right frame of mind for them, then that's horrifying.
Yeah.
You know, like if you're thinking clearly and this is what you're doing, that's scary to me. It's actually more scary than the actual action in some ways, because you're capable of so much more of it. I think there's no signs of sexual assault, thank goodness. But, and hopefully all of, I'll say this every once in a while. I hope it was just fast, you know?
Yeah.
Because this just sounds painful and awful, and it's our greatest fears coming to life. And if you're children, then it's, those are probably your biggest fears, getting hurt, you know?
Yeah.
Especially if it happens to be somebody you love, you know, it's hurting him. I couldn't imagine. So, sometimes I'll think, and you're the licensed therapist of the duo. When there's an attack on a specific member of the family, the boy, right?
Yes.
The little boy. Is it uncommon for that person to put himself in that kid's shoes as himself? Like kind of, well, when I was five, I didn't have such protection. Like who knows what happened to David? And I'm not saying that let's just say hypothetically it is David. And I'm not saying that it's okay then because, you know, he didn't, you know, this is just unresolved trauma, you know, and it's like, it's okay that he killed him. No, I'm simply saying that, I don't know where I'm going with that, but do you know what I mean? Like,
yes, I do.
Is it uncommon?
I think that it's totally common to want to destroy something that you don't like about yourself in someone else.
Yeah.
You know, so trying to kill off Benjamin as a way to maybe kill off a part of yourself. Or if there was someone else that was not David that was doing the murdering, it's possible that he took Benjamin as a stand-in for David.
When you say stand-in, what do you mean by that?
A place where he could, a person or place where he could sort of displace his anger towards David, closest person to him.
Like, let's say like the person who did it was, this is directed towards David. Well, I'm going to hurt him where it really hurts.
I'm going to hurt Benjamin. Right.
Yeah,
exactly. And it makes more sense since he's the youngest. He's the only boy.
It's like some mafia type of thought process, you know?
Yeah.
At least in the books, I don't. So the police do finally go and do a wellness check. I say finally, but I don't, Yeah, I'm pretty sure they go that night. So it's a reasonable amount of time, I think. And they do, you know, they discover that the crime scene.
Yeah.
It's awful. It's probably so much worse than we can imagine. I'm guessing, do we know, like, David's reaction?
No, we don't.
Yeah. That's something I was kind of thinking about, because I originally heard about this on a podcast, like, a year ago, 2 years ago, and it's something I remember thinking about, and I didn't really think to go and do it, because I wouldn't imagine that David would be in the right state of mind to go and do another drive after hearing... I mean, maybe they did they break the news over the phone, you think?
I think they probably did, or maybe they sent a an officer to do it in person. That's
interesting, yeah. I mean, for all we know, they could have set up some type of mode of transportation. That's probably unlikely.
Yeah, it was the 80s. Remember, if you could get behind the wheel of a car, you could drive.
All right. David probably went to a local car dealership and bought a Corvette and then drove home.
Right.
Yeah, that wouldn't be at all a red flag. So, no. But yeah, I guess, you know, he came home somehow. And just 5 days later, we're at a funeral and David is publicly sobbing. He's just distraught as somebody would be. This has to be shocking for the neighborhood. It has to be shocking for just a variety of reasons. There's no motive. This is very Nancy Guthrie again, except this actually has the bodies.
Yeah. And I do wish that we had some information about what David's initial reaction is. Cause I hope it was one of disbelief, because that to me would be the more realistic reaction.
I mean, I guess some people just deal with trauma differently, right? But it really would be very dangerous for him to drive such a long distance after getting this news. I wouldn't suggest it. 3 weeks later, the police actually arrest David. Pretty much, from what I could tell, he's their prime suspect.
Yes.
Even though he has, like, a pretty decent alibi. But he's just charged with 8 counts of murder, 4 victims. With 2 different avenues of theories. I didn't know that you could have 8 counts of murder and just double up the theories.
Yeah.
Can you? I mean, it's...
I guess you could. Again, I'm back to... It was the Wild West in the 80s, I think.
Yeah, I guess. And, I mean, he basically is brought up on trial. And they're... I'm imagining if he's innocent, that they're just kind of... Well... What led him to do it, and who else could have done it? And there doesn't appear to be any evidence to show that he did it, which is another aspect to all of this. You know, there's his DNA is all around the house, of course, makes this very difficult. Do we have anybody who saw him leave? We have a receipt, I believe, for him, maybe an hour later or something like that. Like, he went to get gas.
Yes. We have a receipt, but I don't know that we saw anyone, that we know anyone who saw him leave. But there must have been, you know, if he's checking into all these hotels and motels, there must have been proof of him being there.
Mm. So it's kind of like an open and shut type of thing. Well, like, all right, what he did is he killed them, went on the road, and that's it, right? And that's kind of like where the case ended to a point. He had his first trial. He was convicted a year later on November 29th on all counts. I don't know if he was... He wasn't charged on 8 counts of murder because there's only 4 victims, right?
Right, but I think it was... I forget the charges... But there were 2 different charges that...
But he was sentenced to 4 consecutive life terms, which
right.
is this is going to be a bad word for this, but it's pretty excessive for a case without that much evidence.
Right, but you still got four dead bodies.
True, and he was the last person to see them. It's almost like the Nancy Guthrie case,
right?
But without the bodies. So, let's see. So he went to 80. In 85, he was sentenced to the four consecutive. 88, he appeals, but they uphold the conviction. But in 1990, in the summer of 1990, the Supreme Court decides to reverse the conviction. They basically state that they improperly introduced evidence because he had these affairs with women who are models with back braces, which we were kind of talking about earlier. And
yes,
this is, I guess, where we can introduce his personal life a little bit. He, he would bring the models in and he would, did I see anywhere where he would draw on them?
Yes, he had to make marks for where the brace was supposed to lay. Because again, remember, we've got breasts now.
Right.
And so that is going to interfere with how the device was positioned.
Okay. But he had to be the person to draw it, I guess. Like he's the one with the Sharpie.
Yeah, he's the one with the Sharpie, and he was fitting them for these photo shoots to add as an advertisement. And in some of the it appears that in some of the photo shoots, the women were in fact in various degree of being unclothed.
Even though the brace is meant to be worn on top of clothing.
Right. But they want to show what it would look like. I don't know. It was not a sexy brace. I'm telling you.
Right. I cannot imagine a sexy brace, but maybe it's out there somewhere. If you know, let's see your sexy braces, people.
Right.
A whole different fetish just opened up for somebody out there. Not me.
So can we talk about the women that were testifying, though, at the trial? Yes. About with the models? So 13 women were allowed to testify for the prosecution at the trial.
I wonder if how many. Like, were there 40 and only 13?
That's a really good question. And I don't think we'll ever know the answer to that but there were obvious, I want to say 13 out of 16, and 13 were permitted to testify, but I don't know where I got that number.
Right.
The state's assertion that their testimony would show a quote, a pattern starting with the first couple of models, both a pattern that's both in time and in character, indicating from nothing unprofessional occurring with one of the models to a rather rapid fitting session of which no nudity was required. So the idea was they were saying, oh, this was an escalating issue where he kept getting the models exceedingly less clothing and more impropriety. But in fact, that no pattern was established. So with some of them, with some of these women, he was inappropriate. He made attempts to hug or kiss the models or fondling them sexually. But overall,
was he actually touching the women in that manner? Like literally fondling? Well,
some said that he touched the breast, but not the nipple. And so if you're thinking about
same thing to me, you know what I mean? Like that's just,
don't know if it is though. Like if you're trying to turn a woman on, you're not, honking her boob.
I feel just coming from a male point of view, I feel as though if your hand is going to touch to touch a woman's breast, right? And your hand touches their side boob, it's the same thing, like on paper anyway. And
side boob is an accident though, no?
It can be. And if you say, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Or if you in these body cams, right? Sometimes men have to do the frisk down on the women. And what they use is the back of their hand, even though it seems kind of, weird. They do a pat down with the back of their hand. So there are ways of doing this where you don't completely violate. I just feel as though if somebody went and put their hand on your shoulder, right?
Yes.
It's a, you know, like, all right, that's kind of a thing. But if they put their hand on your boob, not touching your nipple, you know, that's touching your boob, I think.
That's I don't know, opinion. Because remember, they're trying to
fix
this device properly.
You go to Trader Joe's right now and you try to see what happens.
Trader Joe's. Interesting clientele you've chosen for me.
I hate Trader Joe's so much that it's, yeah. And it's the only place where I can think of where it's like you're just standing there like all day online.
Yeah, this is true. I'm not a fan either. And when I go in, I come out with nothing that I needed and everything that I want.
Right.
So I'm not like, really allowed to
like,
go
I really
there.
Don't need another brie.
No.
I hate it. I hate it so much.
And even if you did like that brie, you'd never find it again because they never carry the same item twice.
And no, I don't need any more spinaca pita. Yeah. Keep your Greek food over there. All right. But yeah, I mean, from a male point of view, if I were to put my hand on a woman's bumpy, right? That's the breast. It's the breast.
Right.
It's a breast touch.
I don't know. I think that when he's...
But if it's medical, right?
Yeah.
You say, I am so sorry. I'm going to do my best to not grope you. Like, that's what you say.
I'm going to touch your breast so that I can... I'm going to touch you if you're squirmish. I'm going to touch you so I can better adjust the brace.
And she's like, why are you so sweaty? That's right. And you know, and that's probably the fact of the matter. He's a creep. This is creepy stuff.
I don't think so.
I think, in my opinion, I think that he was getting off a little bit on being around these younger women who I think were all above 18. I don't think they were minors. I don't know this. So thankfully we're not talking about like an underage situation. Not that molesting, you know, a 15-year-old versus a 20-year-old is any better in the big scheme of life, but at least it's somewhat legal, more legal, right? More legal.
Yeah.
Less illegal. Is that fair? I don't recommend grabbing women. How about that? Or men for that.
I don't recommend grabbing women either. Yeah. But I think I just see this unfolding a different way. Like, I think he probably made a pass at one or two of these women, you know, maybe more. But I think in general, I think they made a lot bigger deal.
So it was overblown, you think?
Yes.
It's definitely possible. You know, we definitely heard about a lot of interesting stories a few years ago that were coming out of like Hollywood casting couches. We were just talking
about
where, you know, some people came to the table saying, well, this happened to me. And it was like the big public secret that, you know, people sleep their way to the top. And it can be shocking, but it's also just sadly seems to be a part of the culture of business. So yeah, I mean, look, if you're a model, I guess, and you're being told to take your top off because I'm going to put a brace on you, I guess you can't get too crazy if his hand actually, you know, bumps into your breast. But right. I just don't get the vibe that it was bumping. I feel like it was squeezing.
Okay.
Bumping and squeezing. I don't know.
Bumping
I just,
and squeezing. Definitely two distinctions.
Yeah, and... I don't know. I just, guys, you know, guys can be kind of creepy. Especially, you know, if nobody's watching or nobody's like, or if I'm the boss, you know, it's like, you got to take this because, you know, otherwise you get fired, you know, you just, you know, poor girl's trying to make $100, you know, and it's like, she's being fondled. But it's very possible. Like what you said, it wasn't as lewd as they made it out to be. So what I think, I just want to bring up John Lewis.
Yes, please.
Because John Lewis doesn't get mentioned at all, really. Or there's really no focus on John Lewis.
Well, tell our listeners who John Lewis is.
John Lewis is married to Susan Hendrick's sister, Martha. So for all intents and purposes, John is the brother-in-law.
Right? Yes.
So yep. he worked at a local hospital in Bloomington. And that night, he came home with bloodied surgical scrubs on.
Right.
And the end, right? It's like, oh, he did it. And that's where I lean to with the rest of it. He said, hey, Martha, his wife, can you wash these for me? There's a doctor that I work with, and these are his. Right? Was that the story?
Yeah. And leave it to a man to not even do his own murder laundry.
Right? It's like, oh, you know how to get that blood out, Martha.
Yeah.
So Martha initially told the police that her husband was home all night, because the police, of course, were proactive in terms of, all right, who are you related to? Who's home? Who's not? Blah, blah, blah. And Martha goes, well, my husband was home all night. But leaving out the fact that he wasn't home all night and that he went out at some point to, quote, lift weights.
Mm-hmm.
And came home. And is that when he had the bloody scrubs on?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it had to have been, though.
I don't believe anything from Martha or John.
Right.
But for whatever reason, they didn't investigate this.
Like, it was the night of the murder that he came home with the blood.
Yes. It was that scrub. Night. It was the 7th.
Yes.
Which is just painfully such a coincidence.
Such a poor coincidence. If John is innocent, I feel bad for him.
Information that was never released. The name of the doctor.
Yeah.
Whose blood it was. Because it was washed, right? We can't. Even in 83, though, there was no DNA anyway. I think you could tell, if it's the same type of blood, but you're not going to be able to test DNA. I'm not for another, 10, 15 years.
At least.
So Martha lied to the police about her husband's whereabouts. And it just so happened that when he came home, he had bloody scrubs on. And she's like, yeah, and I washed them. There was animosity and jealousy. Supposedly, John and David were clearly different financial brackets, but almost, if you think about it, in a similar industry. You're both in the medical world, but David's, he's the inventor. He's making, I don't know how much money he was making in the early 80s.
A lot.
A million a year?
It says at one point they referred to an airplane hangar.
Oh, I didn't hear that. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I throw a million out there because it's if you're making $1 million in the 80s, it's 15 million. It's crazy.
Yes.
Lindsay's I make 15 million.
Yeah. Yeah, right. More than that, obviously, Mark.
Obviously. I'm a podcaster after all.
Yeah.
So there had to have been, it didn't have to be, but allegedly, there was jealousy between John and David, and David later claimed that John did resent him and his business success, money, and his lifestyle. I don't know about the lifestyle, because do you mean the groping of the models? Or,
right.
But you're talking about aircraft hangars. So, was he making jet money? Because he's staying in a motel,
Yeah, but where else is he going to stay?
You buy an RV. It's the 80s. You live in it. I don't know.
Oh, God. I think an RV would be worse than a motel.
Me too. But, I'm just. You would send a proxy, I guess. You don't even do this trip.
But you like roping the models.
Are the models in Wisconsin?
I think the most models are anyway. I don't really know.
Yeah. Well, you got. I mean. Yeah, the Wisconsin models, they really don't hold a candle to the Illinois ones.
Right.
The Illinois is where it's at, I think. So there's friction. There's absolute friction. There was also a baby shower that Martha was upset about not being invited, right? So this is But I don't know if this is just like, you know, family being bitches to each other.
Well, I don't think, I mean, if the question is, did John kill David's family because Martha wasn't invited to a baby shower? I think the answer is a hard no.
Oh, well, not because of that. But
right.
In all fairness, if you look at the entire case, who has the most evidence, like physical evidence, to prove guilt? And I would say it's John.
I would say it's John as well.
John's wife lied, and the bloody scrubs.
And the bloody scrubs that apparently they weren't supposed to bring from. I read something on Reddit that they weren't supposed to bring. It's a biohazard, so you weren't supposed to bring them home from the hospital. They were supposed to be laundered at the hospital at that point.
Like, what are you doing leaving work in bloody scrubs? Like, you're in a hospital. Like, there are scrubs. The place is stupid with scrubs.
Sure.
You could probably have put on scrubs and, I mean, like you said, it's a biohazard. They have their own methods of, you know, disposing or cleaning.
It's right.
Weird. So weird. So he was definitely hiding something.
He's definitely hiding something. And I wonder if it was or wasn't the first time when Martha was asked to wash bloody scrubs. Because I think that would make all the difference.
No, I don't believe in polygraph exams. Like, I don't think that they're, you know,
they exist. Yeah.
Yeah, they exist. I have to accept it. And did I mention to you, I don't know if I mentioned this, that in New Mexico, they are admissible.
No.
Isn't that kind of interesting? I learned that from the Nancy Guthrie stuff.
Oh.
There are, I think, I don't know this for sure. I think there's 9 states in the nation where it is admissible to use polygraph, which is kind of shocking to me.
Yeah.
Because it's essentially like a science experiment with a D-cell battery. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know enough about it. Clearly, I just find that polygraph exams seem a little too goofy to me, but okay. John was questioned early on in the investigation and he offered to take a polygraph exam in which he passed, whatever that means. It is admissible right. In one, you know, almost 1/5 of the nation. So whatever.
I don't know if I'm giving a lot of credit to the fact that he passed.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the George Costanza thing. It's not a lie if you believe it.
Right.
And, you know, his story just doesn't add up. But what would be his motivation for killing the whole family? Yes, that's what, like, let's get to that. What is David's motivation? Well, what do you think his motivation would be?
He could start fresh.
Start fresh.
Except for the fact, or maybe, well, actually, I don't know if this weighs it one way or the other, but the night before the murders, the defendant, you know, so David stated that he and his wife had spoken for a period of time about discussing an adoption of a young boy they knew.
This is totally new to me.
Yeah.
So is there any other information about that? They just discussed it. Is it like your marriage is falling apart? Let's get another cat or another dog.
We only have 3 cats here.
Toxoplasmosis.
This is true. No,
but I'm not pointing my finger at people who have. I have 2 dogs, you know. It's like and 1 kid.
Right.
So it's just I use that as an example because it is something that happens from time to time. You know, how many times do we hear a thing where people just keep having kids, you know, thinking it's going to fix the marriage and it just doesn't.
Exactly. Exactly. And could it be possible that this fear of or possibility of adopting another boy was what Susan wanted because her identity is basically wife and mom, you know, and definitely not what David wanted. And then he became alarmed.
What I wonder is the 20-year-old who's listening to this podcast right now is probably like, well, you know, they were older, you know, they were 30, you know, and I'm wondering when I was 30, I felt 40, you know, like I felt old, like, I'm like, oh God, I'm getting so old. And you don't realize how young 30 is until you're a little older. So I wonder is he like hanging out with like the, you know, 20-year-olds or something with the models? He's like, yeah, I can start fresh, even though it's like, you're only 30. Like, what are you talking about?
Right.
But isn't it really nuts to kill your entire family to start fresh?
It is nuts. I don't think David did it. I really don't.
Do what people do and get a divorce, I guess. It's going to be gross and sticky, but it's at least legit and nobody dies.
Right. Although,
His religion is.
Yeah.
His religion doesn't believe in divorce, and they actually will throw you out of the religion.
Right.
So, I mean, that's how much of a. I think that's nutty personally, but you know,
I think it's nutty too. And yet here we are. And you know, so David got off on acquittal.
Yeah.
He served, I think it was about 7 years, we said. And then he got off on an acquittal, and he's out and free and married to his fourth wife.
Yeah, he didn't have a great success in marriage right away.
Or again and again and again?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he continued killing or killed him. But what would have been John Lewis's motivation if he had done it? Because he's the one who has the most evidence against him, even though like he was barely brought up.
Yeah. That's a good question. What would have been his motivation?
Is it just jealousy?
Yes, jealousy. Maybe his clout would go up in the family.
I mean, to get really gross and disgusting, could David have hired him to do it? I don't know. Maybe.
I'm thinking. Could he have hired him to do it? I guess so. But don't you think that John would have sort of turned on him? And they would have had a better plan, I feel like. Listen, David did such a good job calling in, you know, for the welfare checks and establishing his alibi. I would think, well, I guess not, because he was committed. He was, yeah. But besides the fact that he went to prison for about 7 years, he did such a good job of establishing an alibi for himself. I don't know. I could see John doing it on his own. Out of jealousy, out of anger. You know, I just can't imagine how all four of these people died so silently or so cooperatively.
Yeah, it's really, that's one of those things that's just shocking. It had to have happened either by two people or one. Could it have been both? No.
Yeah.
Yes, it could have been.
I guess it could have been, but again,
there were two weapons.
Well, that is an interesting thing. Why use two weapons otherwise?
And then wipe them down and leave them there.
And why wipe the weapons down and leave them there?
Well, somebody's guilty. Somebody. It's an awful, awful situation. If David is innocent, then I feel bad. I feel like he's not innocent of everything.
I don't think he's a great guy.
No.
I just am not so sure he murdered his family.
I mean, if you put it on paper, and it's very simple, right? They went out, they had their night, they came home, he chased them around, blah, 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 yay! And then he leaves on a road trip. While he's leaving, almost at the same exact time, somebody comes to their house and murders the entire family.
Right.
And when he arrives, he can't reach out to them. He can't find them, calls the police. They find the bodies, and he is brought up on charges. Meanwhile, overnight, his brother-in-law showed up at home in bloody scrubs.
I think it's the brother-in-law.
It's the brother-in-law.
It's the brother-in-law.
And he is a husband. So yeah. The husband did it. Yeah, I think he got off on it. Like, he just somehow, they didn't feel as though that was enough evidence. I feel like if that was brought right to the jury would want more information about John.
I would too.
Yeah. But I guess the reason why he was dismissed and why he's a free man today, I'm guessing, I don't know if he's still alive, why he would become a free man again is primarily because there was just not enough evidence to prove that he actually did it.
Yeah. And you couldn't even indict it. They couldn't even indict him for it.
So the only person who knows if he did it, obviously, is him. And what I find also interesting is he got remarried and divorced, I guess, right? So why is it okay to divorce them?
I think he's left behind his religion, if I had to guess.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine that it's his religion that put him into this position in the first place. Maybe he was very angry about that.
This could be true.
Yeah. But we'll never know. And but Lindsay, I want to thank you so much for discussing this and breaking down all these different theories and talking about groping boobs. Oh, geez.
I have no problem. I'll grope boobs with you anywhere.
There we go. It's cool. I'm a podcaster.
Yeah, exactly.
Why call the police? What? Lindsay said, that's not touching boob.
Oh, yeah.
Jeez. Holy moly. All right. No, don't grab boobs, people. Keep your hands to yourself, men and women.
Yes, I know. Your axes and butcher knives.
Yeah, if you have any ideas for merchandise for The Husband Did It, be kind of, you know, let us know. I'd love to find like a reproduction of an axe. That way, you can actually hang it on a wall without it falling and killing one of your beautiful cats accidentally.
Oh yeah.
But having like a lightweight axe that says like The Husband Did It, and it blinks every time we put out an episode.
I love it. Yeah, we'll work on it.
But Lindsay, as always, thank you so much for everything that you have done and do. And people should head on over to thehusbanddidit.com and all that kind of good stuff.